Well, this week, our lessons on continue with Christ and the law. And I really would encourage you, if you weren't here last week, to listen to last week's presentation by Rob. Dr. Rob Shepherd, I thought, did a tremendous presentation on law and what does it mean. And if I could summarize real quickly some of the things he said, because I think it's so applicable, that as soon as you talk about how, as soon as you talk about how to do something, you then entertain and are with the devil. So when we talk about law, and we talk about how do we do something, he used the example of his wife. You know, we all like how-to books. Why do we like how-to books? What? They're easy to follow. Not if you have her give you one of her recipes. Diane is the worst at writing down how to. She will make a recipe, and I said, "Well, what did you put it?" "Well, let's see. I think how much?" And you know why I want the how to? I want the result. I want the result. And somehow, when I do it, it doesn't have the same result. So we want the how-to so we can get to the result. But what is that really implying?
We do it ourselves.
We do it ourselves, and it's our actions that are getting us the result. Now, it's true in cooking. We are doing it to get the result. But you apply it to a relationship, any relationship, what happens? We may not get the result. That's one of my challenges as a therapist, working with marriage situations. Well, tell me how to do this. I have this one couple that have had a tumultuous relationship for years, and on and off, not married. Now she's pregnant, and they were had a real breakthrough and seemed to be coming together, and now they're back in this kind of... And I was talking to the man on Thursday, and he kept talking about all the things. I said, the problem is you're disconnected. The problem is emotional. He emailed me yesterday, this long email that she sent, and his long response. And I emailed him back and said, the problem is the emotional connection. The problem isn't where you're going to live. The problem isn't how you're going to take care of the baby. The problem isn't this. The problem is the emotional connection. But in his mind, all he can focus on is, what can I do to get this thing fixed? Tell me how to do it, because I want this result. So that's really kind of a summary, but I really would encourage you, if you, once Sue will be putting these on Sunday, because they, her and Ernie are on vacation. But anyway, I think that's an important thing. And today it's Christ and the Law and the Sermon on the Mount. And it's interesting to think about the Sermon on the Mount. Go ahead.
Speaking of disconnection, would it make everybody uncomfortable if we turn that fan off?
Let's turn it off. Whoops, that's the wrong switch. The better choice, huh?
A disconnection.
So going back to understanding the law, I clipped this out of the newspaper, and I thought, how intriguing is this? A teacher in the Abilene School District is accused of performing a lap dance on a teenage boy at school on his 15th birthday. A criminal complaint says 42-year-old blah blah was arrested on suspicion of improper relationship with a student. Investigators say the incident at Stovall Middle School occurred on February 26 in front of their other students. Now, is there a law about lap dancing as a teacher? Do you know the law that says you can't do that as a teacher? Why are we laughing? What?
A moral law.
Yeah. A moral law?
Proper conduct, being an example.
You know what hit me when I read that? What was disconnected in that teacher's emotional world?
Isn't there one like in the teacher's contract that says
that? And you're probably sure there is one on there. But I don't. Okay, that's a great point, Angela. We then say, oh, we've got to add this to the law. But truthfully, the disconnect is on an emotional, intellectual experience. It's on a personal experience within that person. And we look at the result, we look at the behavior, but what's happening in the brain? What's happening in the body? What's happening in that person's belief that the behavior is a result? You know, we focus on behavior. And it's interesting to think about how we look at the behavior and we that's how we have to make judgments. In our society, we make judgments all the time based upon this behavior or that behavior. But Jesus, in his Sermon on the Mount, totally challenged all the rules at the time. All the kinds of things he challenged at the time. And this particular lesson doesn't go into all the different things that he talked about. It starts on verse 17. Chapter 5, verse 17. Do you think that I've come to abolish the law or the prophets? I did not come to abolish, but to fulfill. What law did God come to fulfill? The what? The Ten Commandments. Which one?
All ten.
All ten. And how did he fulfill them? Whoops, you open your mouth, now you're not sure what to say.
By living rightly.
By living rightly. Okay, what do the rest you think? Okay. So he came to show what the fulfillment of the law would look like. Okay. How about the rest of you? What do you think? He came to fulfill the law. And we typically think of the Ten Commandments. There's all a bunch of other things. Go ahead.
I think Jesus made a good example when he said, by love, you know, on these hang all the law and the prophets. That's why he expanded on love and murder. You hate your brother, you've already committed it in your heart. He was trying to show it's from the heart that the law is worked out.
Okay. So it was a showing the total understanding. Because, go ahead.
So, we have two words. We have destroy and fulfill. So, we might need to define.
Okay, great.
See, what he's not destroying and what he's fulfilling. Because if he fulfills love, then we don't have love. That's what he already did.
Uh-huh.
And that's not what we know.
Uh-huh.
We have to love. So, we might need to define what he destroyed.
Okay.
Well,
tell us what do you think he described?
I need to know.
What do the rest you think?
Well,
She brought up an interesting point. We have to understand, what does he come? I do not think that I came to abolish the law of prophets. I did not come to abolish, but to fulfill. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So it was the contrast between what the time period was at the moment. The time period was such that it was how many steps you could take on the Sabbath, how many things you could do. We'll start with you and then we'll be right over here. Go ahead.
The Pharisees kept the law.
They kept the law. Okay, that's a great word. There's another word we need to find. What does it mean to keep the law? Okay. He kept the law, keeping the law versus living the law. Go ahead.
He also gave away the ceremonial law. I mean, the ceremonial law was pointing towards his sacrifice.
Uh-huh.
So again, once that occurred, we'll do away the ceremonial law.
Okay. So it was pointing toward him, and he came to fulfill that part of it so that that wouldn't be needed. Okay. Then, when you do some things like this, it's always interesting to start thinking about, okay, some people decide what he did away with. Some people decide what he continued. Leroy gave me this a couple of weeks ago after Sabbath school one day. He says, the law that Moses brings down from Sinai is not the revelation of a secret that had been withheld from man. Quite the opposite, in fact. When God is depicted as speaking to Moses, what he is saying is an articulation of what had been known, at least in part, all along. Far from claiming to have privileged insight into inscrutable secrets, Moses presents his law as being precisely what the nations of the world should be ready to recognize as wisdom, understanding, and justice. That's interesting. Presents his laws precisely what the other nations of the world should be readily able to recognize as wisdom, understanding, and justice. So, this we take it and we look at those Ten Commandments and we think that became the law, but that was something that was there even before that. But what happens when you forget? You need it written down. How many times you say, well, I forgot to write it down? The law was written down. But we take that law and we want to break it down into the how. And remember what Rob has said about the Ten Commandments. The Ten Commandments are really a statement of what we're going to experience when we are in a relationship with God. It's written in future tense. It's not written as a how-to. Do these things and do these things, and then you'll have a relationship. This wasn't an arranged marriage situation. This was in a relationship. This is what it's going to look like. So Jesus goes on. For truly I say unto you, that until heaven and earth pass away, not the smallest letter or the stroke shall pass away from the law, until all is accomplished. Now there's so many words there we could sit and focus on. What all is accomplished? Whoever then annuls one of the least of these commandments, and so teachers others shall be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever keeps and teaches them, he shall be called the great in the kingdom of heaven. For I say to you that unless your righteousness surpasses that of the scribes and Pharisees, you shall not enter the kingdom of heaven. Where does righteousness come from?
Jesus Christ. All our own righteousness is this filthy record.
Absolutely.
So I see the law demands death. by Jesus coming, he died for us.
Okay.
And he fulfilled that law.
Mm-hmm.
That law still exists. When I came here this morning, I think I obeyed all the rules of the road.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have them written down, but boy, I got them up here. And I tell the police officer, well, I didn't write that one down, so I forgot.
Right.
You know, so they have to be written in our hearts. We have to know what is required of us. And yet, it's not, once we start the how business, then it becomes a works trip.
It does.
When we have that relationship with our Lord and Master, or we have a relationship with our spouse, we don't write down all the rules of what she wants. We just know. We know how to make her happy. We know what she likes. We know what a good relationship. We know what to do to be happy in our home. It's written in our hearts.
Absolutely.
And it just becomes a natural response to obey the law.
It's a natural response that really requires one to be in tune with oneself and another person.
And really, you don't even think about it.
No, we don't. But what's interesting is, sometimes to get there, we have to think about it.
Sure.
We have to develop a mindfulness of it. We have to develop an awareness of what we're aware of. For the last 3 months, I've been having a buzzing in my ears. And it's been an interesting experience. Called tinnitus, going to the doctor, see what they can do about it. But it's an interesting experience for me personally to realize, how do I keep the focus away from that, keep what I was going through my ears? You're shaking your head. Some, you can relate. Okay, maybe. You know, and it's an interesting thing is, where is going to be my focus? Because I tell you, when I can really focus in on what's going on and that, what that noise is, whoa, everything else gets out of focus. Everything else gets out of focus. I'm not conscious of where I am. I'm not conscious of what I'm doing. It's like it's just pervasive. But then when all of a sudden when I get engaged with other experiences, I almost have to check in. Is it still there? Oh, yes, it's still there. It's still there. Oh, okay. But that's where we put our focus. I was at a workshop. It was a staff meeting at an agency. We're talking about trust-based...
Oh, I wrote it down.
Trust-based relational interventions. And it's the local professors at TCU, Dr. Karen Purvis, Dr. David Cross, are really involved in this, doing this with foster children. The interesting part is they have three components of it. The first one is connecting. How do we emotionally connect? The second one is empowering. And the third one is correcting. So one of the things they ask parents, how much of your time do you spend emotionally connecting? How much of your time do you spend emotionally connecting to your children? And that's a good question to ask yourself. How much time do I spend emotionally connecting with others in my world? How much time do I spend empowering other people? Empowering, maybe making sure their needs are met, making sure they have some things, you know, things like that. And then how much of my time is spent correcting? Now, if you put that in a triangle, what should be the bottom one? Correcting? You said connecting? You said correcting? Okay. What about the rest of you? What?
Harmony.
Well, I think that's the result of these three. But their whole basis is that connecting must be the thing we do the most. And then empowering. And then correcting. Now look at that pyramid, very poorly drawn pyramid, did it real quick this morning. But what happens to that pyramid if it's this way? Falls over. What do we spend a lot of time doing as a church at times? Correcting. Instructing about how to have correct behavior. And you know what? The challenge is, from dealing with some of these foster kids, they have some bizarre behaviors. When you have a little kid that's smearing feces on your bathroom, it's hard to know how to connect at that moment. Because all you're thinking is, ah. But in this, understanding is that connecting is the most important thing. Now you look at it from God and how He approaches us. You look at this, what we're talking about with Jesus. What did He spend most of His time doing? Connecting and going to the people that were receptive to Him. And who were the ones receptive? Prostitutes. Those in need. Those in need. Those that recognized their need. Everybody was in need, but those who recognized it. And He went and met them where they were. That's the majority of it. I mean, you know, how many great sermons did He give? How many, you know? It was the connecting. It was the praying for the police officer. It was saying, yes, you're in my prayers every day. That was the connecting part. He did some empowering. And then there was some correcting. But too often we have that triangle flipped upside down. We want to focus on the correct how to. And then we wonder what happens to the relationship. It goes on here in Matthew. You've heard that the ancients have told you, you shall not commit murder. And whoever commits murder shall be liable to the court. That's the law, right? But I say to you, everyone who is angry with his brother shall be guilty before the court. And whoever shall say to his brother, Raca, shall be guilty before the Supreme Court. And whoever says, you fool, shall be guilty enough to go into the fiery hell. Now, I want to tell you, my friends, is there any of you that have not been angry with your brother? I might too, sitting right over there. They can tell you. I'm sure there's been a lot of times they've been angry with me. And let's get beyond just the anger. It's anger is not the issue. It's wanting them to be harmed. It's that hatred of them. And they talk about brother not just physiologically or biologically, talking about one another. Now you talk about something that looked like it was destroying every law that these people understood at the time. That totally eradicated. What did it do? It talked about the intent and not the behavior. It talked about looking at what is the intent. I have no idea what this woman's intent was. We can all sit here and say, ah, what a twisted person. We don't know. And I will gladly judge the behavior, but I cannot understand her intent. I could come up with two or three viable possibilities. We can look at history of the Bible and look at people that have did some horrendous acts. But they came to understand and love God. And I think that's one of the key. You know, I bring this out just kind of as a way to realize that we don't understand intent. And we've got to be careful that we look at the whole. And then to realize that we can't make that judgment. We can make a judgment about what's acceptable in the school, but we're not going to make the judgment about that person. So this is what Jesus was saying is, if you have this in your heart, you've already messed up. Now, I don't know about you, but that could be rather discouraging. That could be like, well, what's the hope then? That's exactly right. That's exactly right. On our own, there is no hope. And I think that's what Jesus came to really help people understand. Goes on and talks about law of reconciliation, the law of adultery, the law of divorce. All of these laws were really meant to come bring us back to understanding we need a relationship with God. And it's fascinating how the devil has used those laws and have so distorted them that we make it into the how-to. We make it into what we're going to do with it. And why do we do that? Absolutely. Absolutely. And behind that is fear. Fear is the one of the most dysregulating experience we can have psychologically. Fear takes us to a place where we want to run, we want to fight, or we freeze. Go ahead, you want to say something?
Yeah, I recently read that if you're wondering if you're doing well enough or performing well enough, the answer is no.
The answer is no. If you wonder if you're doing things well enough, performing well enough, the answer is simply no. And what does that mean? Once again, I got to count on something outside of me. I got to count on something outside of me. And to me, that can be a frightening thing. So fear can take us back to several places. We'll fight, we'll run, or we'll freeze. And it's fascinating with all the brain studies they're doing and all the things that we're developing is understanding how those things actually work. The sense of smell actually hits the brain and some of the fear-based amygdala quicker than anything else. So when you think about it, if you have a smell, what did they start doing with some of these foster parents? Just saying, hey, let's make sure you don't wear a lot of perfume. Let's make sure you don't come in and invade these kids' senses with perfume. We don't know what it could trigger. And we think, well, that's kind of ridiculous, you know. But once again, you got to go back to understanding fear. And we look at it with fear with these kids who've had some tragic experiences. But it's the same for each one of us in relationship to God. We have the same fear-based kind of thing. And God has gone throughout every book in this Bible showing how He wants to connect with you and me daily. But we keep thinking, okay, it's okay for today, but tomorrow I think I better do a little more. I'll pull my weight. I got to make sure and do this. I got to make sure and do that. George Knight, in the book, Turn Your Eyes Upon Jesus, I guess it's a devotional. And he said on the March 17th one, both in summary and in commentary, we discovered that God's law is a way of living and thinking rather than a list of do's and don't. Living and thinking. Well, what does it mean to be in a living relationship? What does it mean to be in an attuned experience? Dan Siegel, in the book called Mindfulness, I can turn my page here. When we see the mind of another person, we bring the qualities of being present, curiosity, openness, and acceptance into our relationships. Let me read that again. When we see the mind of another, now we can, a lot of words we could think about. When we see the mind means that we feel felt, we feel understood. We bring the qualities of being present, curiosity, openness, and acceptance into our relationships. These qualities seem to be the essence of that overused, often misunderstood word, love. I propose that this stance of curiosity, openness, and acceptance, and love is at the heart of secure attachments. Secure attachments. I love the word curiosity, openness, acceptance. Do we experience that in ourselves and with other people? And that, do we have that experience with God? Openness, curiosity, acceptance. It's hard to have something with somebody else that we haven't had also in ourselves. Then you say, well, how do you get it? Well, we need others to help us to develop it. But then we've also got to incorporate that ourselves. All of you that have children, grandchildren, you know there is no way that your child could do something that you wouldn't love them. Does your child know that? Maybe not at that moment because their own challenges, because of their own perceptual reality. And that's, you know, as a parent, I'm always challenged to know, okay, how do I make sure I'm engaged and a part of their world, but also aware of how I'm presenting myself. But I know inside that there is nothing that those two girls could do that they would not, I would not love them. Doesn't mean I don't have disappointment. Doesn't mean I don't have frustration. Doesn't mean any of those things. But that experience, in order to be realized, has to be an interconnected experience. My daughter was here last weekend from Brooklyn, and she and I went walking Friday night. I love to go walking with her because we start talking about all kinds of things. And she said, she's talking about going to Brooklyn and her experience in doing that. And then she said, you know, sometimes when I come off of a shift and I'm really bothered and I'm really distressed and thinking about something that occurred, she said, you know what I do, Dad? I said, no. I start singing, Turn Your Eyes Upon Jesus. Look full into His wonderful face, and the things of this world will grow strangely dim in the light of His glory and grace. And as she told me this, as a father, I just started crying inside. I don't know if I cried there at the moment. I was walking. I was grateful. It was dark. We were moving. But I just said, oh, if there's anything I want for my daughters, is for them to have a relationship with God. And she said, I don't sing it out loud. I said, well, why not? You live alone with your cat. She said, I just sing it in my head. Turn your eyes upon Jesus, and the things of this world will grow strangely dim in the light of His glory and grace. To me, there was no greater gift she could have given me for Easter than to be with me and to share her experience. Because it just was a connection about me and her as a daughter, father, but it was also about seeing her develop her life and her developing herself and her developing her relationship. And that is that the dynamic thing about relationships is when she does that, it's affecting her brain. She's developing that secure attachment with God when she does that. When she's distressed and can think those words and then allow her body to relax and go to sleep, she's having something happen to her. She can let fall asleep. Do you know how many people that have trauma have difficulty falling asleep? Why? Because falling means I'm out of control. Falling means I'm letting go. And so when she can have those words and she can relax her body and fall asleep, she's really reinforcing her relationship with God. She really is doing some things for herself that go, that embody the law. That embodies the law right there. I think so. I believe that's true. I believe.